is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zada Jewelers, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
The Killer Bees!
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
Blank, I am Branham. He is also Blank on-site engineering. Brian's back in Gal today. Slacking is what Brian's doing today. You know, we're always keeping you on your toes. You never know what you're going to get with the Killer Bees. We like to take care of you, the listener, you, the Hive, because we love the Hive. We love you. We love you very, very much. So we take care of you with giveaways, with freebies. We're doing that right from the rip. Caller number 3 right now, 713-780-3776. You win a pair of tickets to go watch the Houston Cougars play UNLV tomorrow evening. Caller 3 right from the rip. 713-780-3776. Houston, UNLV, tomorrow. Caller number 3 is the winner. Home opener, new era of Houston Cougar football. Coach Willie Fritz, first game as the Cougars head coach. A night of thrilling plays, hard-hitting action, unforgettable moments. Tickets are just $15. Head to uhcougars.com/tickets. 713-GO-COUGS. To get your tickets, come early, be loud, wear red. Again, caller number 3, you probably already have a winner. That's what we do. You never know what you're going to get with the Killer Bees, Blankers. We're always keeping you on your toes, making sure that you're awake, and we're also taking care of the listener because we love them.
No question about it. And speaking on the toes, I mean, you almost have to be on your toes. I mean, I'm expecting to be sitting next to you, and then you sent me a picture of a tire that had less than a little air in it.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna get into it, but yeah, I stopped by, had to run an errand before work. I went inside, I came back out, and the tire was done. The tire was donezo. So the tire is sitting
donezo.
In a shopping strip. Yeah, it's it had like a I couldn't tell what it was, but it looked like it was a spike. I think one of the twitchers might have put a spike behind my tire because yeah, it was a really rough shape. I'm gonna have to go change it out when we go off the air. But that's why I'm not at East River 9 today. I apologize for that. Apologize
Yikes.
For making it more difficult, but. Yeah, that's the reason that I'm not there. The good news is that we're in
that
good
sucks.
Moods. Yeah, oh well. We're in good moods, though, because the Astros won a baseball game yesterday. Kind of, a little bit of an ugly win, but it's not a beauty contest. A win is a win is a win is a win. Astros come from behind, beat Kansas City yesterday. And look, four-game series against a playoff-caliber team. The Astros win by 3 runs, just like they drew it up.
Yeah, there's plenty to unravel, unfold, and discuss as it relates to this game because for the first, 6 innings, it looked really, really good. I mean, you had, pitchers that were dueling, that were pitching very well. We had talked about Hunter Brown before the game and him probably wanting to get revenge on the Royals for the way that he kind of threw up all over himself. The first time the two teams played, he was pitching great. They pushed across the 2 runs they needed. It looked all like it was coming together. The only big blemish early was the ejection of Alex Bregman, and I don't care how many times I look at that review and rewind it and go over it, unless he's great like a ventriloquist at being able to say a whole lot of nasty words without barely moving his mouth, I was shocked he got tossed, and because of the ramifications and the magnitude of the two teams playing in the game, I just don't know how you throw a guy out there.
Yeah. What do you think he said?
It was obviously about the strike zone, because especially the first pitch I didn't think was a strike. He did take the second one basically right down the middle, and the third one was borderline. But I know that early on he said that's really low in terms of the first strike, but yeah. He probably said something about his zone or basically that, you screwed me because two of those weren't strikes or something to that effect. I just couldn't see the normal kind of, I'm not John Boy, I'm not a lip reader like that, but I couldn't see him look like he was dropping any kind of expletives. He's probably just letting him know that zone wasn't good.
The truth is that expletives are fine. Like Major League Baseball umpires, and I'm not speaking for all of them, but just in general, they usually don't care if you curse. Like, they're big boys. They understand that. They can handle the cursing. The magic word oftentimes for umpires is you. You cost me. You screwed me. You took the bat out of my hand. Usually you is more of a magic word than any bad word, than any F-bomb, than anything, quite frankly. I think that Bregman said the U word a couple of times, because I did try to go back, and you're right, that first pitch that was low, which I think that the low pitch was the worst one in that at bat. I didn't think strike three was egregious. I didn't think it was crazy. Like, I thought that it actually clipped the outside corner at first, and then they showed the replay and showed that it was a green dot. So that one I thought was close. But yeah, that was a very sensitive ejection. I think that Bregman said, you bad worded up that whole at bat. You bad worded up. That's what I think that Alex Bregman said, going back and watching it, watching his lips, knowing what umpires don't like. They don't mind the F word. It's the you. Like, now they're like, oh, you're taking it personal when you say you. So I think that's whatever. I think that's why he threw him out. But yes, super sensitive ejection. That was soft, incredibly soft. The worst call he had all day was that strike three to Jake Myers. That was like a foot off the outside corner.
Yep.
That was insane.
Yeah,
he wasn't giving Brown.
No, you're absolutely
either.
Right. Yeah. And the thing was, is that then the fans kind of got dialed into it, too, and then everybody was watching, and it looked like the next half inning, the same pitches that he was ringing up, that the one he rang up Bregman on, and the same kind of ones he was calling strikes against the Astros, it just looked like the next half inning, Yiner double-pumped about three times, like, that was the same pitch you called a strike in the last half inning. And it looked like from there it was just going to be an issue the rest of the night with everybody involved, because you and I both know that Alex Bregman has got a master's degree in the strike zone no matter what. And if he's questioning a call like that, there's probably good reason to it. And I think you're absolutely right. Going back to what he said, I think that some guys can let it go better than others. And after striking out, which, you know, again, a guy with a good eye, that he takes pride in that, I think he basically said to him, you basically screwed me on an entire at-bat.
Yeah, and a lot of times that's the magic word, is the you. Last night, I think, was a tell of two innings for the most part. You had a good inning, and you had a bad inning. The bad, I guess we'll start there because it happened first. The seventh inning, bad. Jeremy Pena, the error was costly. And look, Jeremy Pena is usually pretty sure-handed. I actually had the fact that he made the mental error, to me, was more costly. Because, look, guys make errors. Yes, we're going to critique them and be upset about them. And I thought Blum nailed it on the broadcast. You have Salvador Perez running. Like, you don't need to charge the ball the way that he charged it to try to play it on a tricky short hop. He had plenty of time to wait back. So the thing that bothered me wasn't so much that he whiffed at it. It was the fact that the mental error of didn't know who the base runner was, which is very uncharacteristic for Pena. He usually has a sharp IQ, and I wonder if his struggles at the plate are carrying over a little bit to the defensive side.
Yeah, I don't know, but you're right. Blummer did nail it. It's crazy. I watched the games with my older daughter, and because of all of her softball, she screams at the TV, "Dad, why aren't they running it out, running to first base?" And I got to explain to her a lot of times, if it's the catchers or certain guys, because they're trying to avoid being hurt, if they think that they're going to be out, they don't bust it down the line as hard. But you're right. With Salvador Perez, you know you've got all the time in the world, because you can time him with a calendar going down to first base. He charged it. He thought it was going to take a higher hop, and then basically it handcuffed him. And then that started just the kind of merry-go-round that was the rest of that inning.
Yeah, that was unfortunate there. The merry-go-round. Then you had the Whitcomb play, which just run into the runner. Like, just run into the guy. Like, I think he got spooked by the runner. Just take him out. Take him out. You're entitled to the baseball. I thought that was a mistake. And then what'd you think of Abreu's performance in relief of Hunter Brown?
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you, because I know Granato was going nuts about it last night on Twitter and again this morning about leaving Hunter Brown in the game. You could tell he wanted to stay in the game. But I think that now that you've got your full complement in the bullpen, I think that Espada felt comfortable making the move there. I think that there's been a couple of times recently when, you know, and you know I always talk about Brian Abreu gets out of most of it, but sometimes he sets the table for himself a little bit. You know, on that one right there, that's just an outside pitch and a guy that put the barrel on it. The only qualm I have with the whole thing, Jeremy, was the fact that 97 up, he was having a hard time locating the breaking pitch anyway. But if he goes 97 up and out, I will live with that from him all day long. Instead, he went to his secondary pitch and he got burned.
Yeah, I thought it was a good time to take Hunter Brown out. He was at 97 pitches. He walked Melendez like he's laboring. Like, I was fine with the hook by Espada. I think that Abreu's outing wasn't as bad as the line score. He induced a ground ball that he should have got out of the inning. He induced the ground ball to Shea Whitcomb.
Yep.
Come in, make the play, inning over. And then even the Isbell double that cleared the bases, yeah, I think it's fair to say he didn't execute the slider the way that he wanted to. Probably caught too much of, not that he caught a lot of the play, but probably left it a little bit more elevated than he would have liked. that was 88 off the bat that went 290 feet. Like, that's a pop-up to left field. Like, that's not hard contact. That play's made 90% of the time. Now, the location's what really cost you because he placed it in perfectly down the left field line. But I didn't think Abreu was, like, you know, getting rocked all over the place like he did a couple of weeks ago. I thought the line score was worse.
The other issue there, too, Jeremy, is the fact that you got a new guy to the team in Gamble who probably isn't as comfortable and used to playing left field in Minute Maid Park as, say, a Dubon or guys that might go all the way into the corner and know how to play that ball where maybe you got a chance to even catch that ball. You could see he kind of eased up, and it looked like he was kind of in between on how to play it. He obviously doesn't want it to get by him. He was hoping it was going to go foul. But I think that if you have someone else out in left field that's had some familiarity with left field, they might play that ball differently.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance of that. I also think that they probably had him played in the gap against the lefty. So it's certainly not a critique of Gamble. Maybe it was lack of experience where he's playing. Yep. Maybe somebody else could have made it. Yeah, I agree with all that. But then the eighth inning. The eighth inning was awesome. DeZinzo's reaction off after the walk. Love to see that. Love to see that for a guy who's been struggling a little bit since Boston, but a big walk that scores the go-ahead run for him.
No question, and you nailed it. I mean, here's a guy that wants to fit in so well, and he knows that he's had this opportunity, and he knows that he hasn't made the best of it yet in terms of at-bats. But a lot of young players, no matter what is thrown up there, especially with a veteran pitcher on the mound, they're thinking he's going after whatever I throw 3-2, thinking I got to throw a strike. I can throw it anywhere. He'll chase it. The fact that he had the discipline to lay off, he deserved to be able to celebrate that because it was huge for the team. It was a big win for him, and people noticed it. The guys were talking about it after the game. I thought that was a great at-bat.
Yeah, pounded the chest, and then Dubon, the big hit after him. So Dubon with that one big hit that he gets once a week and then buys himself 2 weeks' worth of action.
That's right.
That was it. That was it yesterday.
He earned the burn again. And normally it should be for the next game, but yeah, you're right. Seemingly he does that and he earns the playing time for the next week.
Yeah, that was funny. The Yiner play was obviously a big play in that game. You know, that would have been runner's lane interference last year, but they passed that rule in the offseason where you're allowed to go to the cut of the grass now.
Oh, that's right.
That would have been an out last year.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. You're right. I'm glad it didn't come down to that. But craziness all abounds on that play. The fact that the pitcher tried to barehand it was a bit puzzling to me to start with.
Yeah.
And then Pasquiano breaks his thumb on the play as Yiner ran by him. And even looking at it on replay, I'm like, yeah, there was contact. It didn't look like anything serious. Maybe he bruised his wrist. Then the report comes out this morning. I'm like, damn, he's out for the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, I didn't think it looked that bad. Like, it just looked like a normal, like, hey, he brushes him. Like, I mean, sure, Yiner's a solid man, and he's a bull. But his reaction's something that I was like, okay, he's reacting like that's pretty significant. Yiner's just full of, you know, he's a bull. He's full of muscle. I hated that Hunter Brown blankers lost his win, and we'll get to the defense later. But Hunter Brown, remember that relief appearance? Eschenfelder was filling in for TK, and we'll talk to TK at 4 o'clock. He mentioned that he felt the turning point for Hunter Brown's season was that relief performance at Detroit whenever Christian Javier got knocked out early. You know, came in, kind of mopped up some innings, pitched well. I went and looked at his numbers since that relief outing. He's 12-7 with a 2.35 ERA in 19 starts since that relief outing. He has 119 strikeouts and 36 walks. So 12-7, 2.35 ERA. Tarik Skubal, who is the clear favorite to win the American League Cy Young, he's 15-4 with a 2.58 ERA. So Hunter Brown's numbers in 19 starts stack up with the best pitcher in the entire American League.
Yeah, it's always tough to say what's that wake-up call that especially a young pitcher that knows, hey, I went from the penthouse to the outhouse pretty quickly because of the fact that no matter how much people were starting to talk and think about me being a long-term solution here, I wasn't doing my job. And I completely threw up all over myself in Kansas City, and they started to lose favor for me. And we had a lot of people contacting us saying they should send them down. You know, some drastic people saying you should be done with them and all the negativity that came with it. And if it was indeed that moment, you know, it's kind of that leads up to the fact that we know how much he cares. I talked about yesterday how I think he was going to be jacked up for the game last night because his big meltdown came against the Royals. I also think that when he talked about earlier, he knows what it means when the Astros play the Rangers and he got jacked up for that game. But I think that the other thing was, regardless of when it happened, the fact that he was able to kind of take a step back and realize, I got to do some things differently. I got to command the inside part of the plate. And then figuring out that the two-seamer was a pitch that he could re-implement. All those things coming together when they did was exactly what this team needed at a time when only Blanco seemed to be pitching well for them. It's been huge for him. It's been huge for this team. And again, last night, he showed that he is a top two pitcher on this pitching staff.
Yeah, I would even go a little bit further. I think he's turning into one of the better starters in all of baseball. And then last thing that I have, and then, you know, feel free to add anything that you got. Jason Hayward, already paying dividends. Dana Brown, man. Dana Brown knows how to play the waiver wire. First gamble, now Hayward, little two RBI double. Oh, yeah, Dana, we mentioned that Joe Espada has been managing his tail off with, like, pinch hitting in late in games and having to play his entire bench, trying to, you know, make chicken salad out of chicken, other stuff. Same thing with Dana Brown. Like, Dana Brown is slightly making this roster a little bit better with Gamble, a little bit better with Jason Hayward, and it was cool to see Hayward immediately pay those dividends.
No doubt. I mean, and listening to the pregame press conferences and the interviews, you just already know he is an upstanding, really, really good dude, and he wanted to fit in. He said he had choices. He liked the thought of coming to play in Houston with some future Hall of Famers, with a team that's playing for something that has a chance for him to play on a pretty consistent basis, knowing it, that Tucker's going to be out. But for him to contribute right away, I mean, you find lightning in a bottle twice. You take a Ben Gamble off the scrap heap, which no one thought was going to be a guy where you could rely on hit better than 300, and looking like, you know, he can play multiple outfield positions is one thing, but the way he's commanded the plate, going the other way, driving baseballs, and then in the first game that you put Hayward in the lineup, he comes through with the big double down the line. He looks like he's a guy that you want to have out there. The only when you asked if there's anything else for me, the reverse splits said, I don't know that I would have pinch hit for him or some of the lefties coming up in that inning, but at the same time, everything worked out and all's well that ends well, but I love the fact that in game one he was able to contribute.
The reverse splits you're talking about, are you talking about 24 or career?
No. The pitcher that was pitching in the inning, he had reverse splits where lefties had more success against him by about 100 points, and then Espada went to all three righties, and they all struck out.
Yeah, that's a good point. I thought you meant Hayward splits, because everybody's talking about how Jason Hayward's hitting 300 against lefties this year, but then omitting the fact that he only has 13 at-bats.
Like, yeah,
okay.
No.
Yeah, you can't read into the 300 average with 13 at-bats, because his career numbers against lefties aren't very good. Yeah, it was good job by all. I also listened to Hayward's pregame in the dugout yesterday. I was listening to it this morning whenever I saw my flat tire. He said that he was told that he could play all three outfield positions here. So it's like, oh, does that mean the Astros could bench Jake Meyers against certain right-handed pitchers? Maybe when you have like a Fromber or a Hunter Brown who's pitching, who are ground ball guys, so you can sacrifice a little bit of outfield defense easier? I noticed that, Jason Hayward. Don't be surprised if we see that maybe every now and then.
Look, I know he's a good athlete, and I know that over his career he's been a very good defensive outfielder. I just don't think that he's a center fielder at this point in his career. I missed that. I did catch a lot of the interviews Julia and other people had with him, but I did not see that clip because I would have marked that going, wait a minute, I know if you need a good offensive lineup, you have options, and now with Chaz down, you don't have the same kind of options. But I don't think that I would ever consider putting Jason Hayward in center field.
Yeah, he caught my ear. He's only played one inning there this year. Now, last year he played a good amount. He appeared in 23 games in center field last year, and I was reading some reports, too, whenever he was still a Dodger, that said he was taking fly balls in center as a way to try to keep his job instead of Kevin Kiermaier. So, I think it would have to be a very, you know, very nuanced situation. I think it would have to be with Fromber or Hunter Brown pitching, who are ground ball guys, so you can sacrifice the defense. And obviously the opposing pitcher would have to be a righty who's just, like, really, really tough against righty. Like yesterday, like Singer. You know, you have Singer on the mound, tough righty against righties. You had Hunter Brown, ground ball guy. You know, maybe that would be a situation in the future where you could just see the Astros deploy an offensive left-handed outfield knowing they can sacrifice a little bit of defense. But we'll see. Astros 4 games back in the race for the number 2 seed, and they're 4 games up on Seattle now. So a couple of races to keep your eyes on. Killer Bees, half of us broadcasting live from the River House, East River 9. It's a great spot to hang out on a Friday. Great food, great drink, great sights, beautiful, beautiful view of downtown Houston. So make sure you head out there to East River 9 to hang out on a Friday after work. Get your weekend started right, or just hang out there this weekend. Busy show all Fridays are. Todd Callis will be joining us at 4 o'clock. Who said it? At 4:30. DJ Bienemy will be joining us at 5 o'clock. 713-780-ESPN. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. ESPN Houston on YouTube, ESPN975 on Twitter. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. When do we start talking about the defense for the Astros as an issue that we have to pay attention to? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Brandon.
River House, East River 9. Awesome, awesome spot to hang out anytime, especially on a Friday. Work is done. Twitchers don't have no job. They could always be there. But a great spot on a Friday, great spot on a weekend, great spot to play 9, par 3. Great, great views of the city. The driving range, if you want to work on the game, pickleball courts, they have it all. They have it all. They have great food. Great food, great drink, of course, inside the River House. 0794 DFA should stand for designated for Astros. That works. And then 1029, can Hayward play first? I don't think he can play first. He played there six games last year. That's not
I don't. If he's played it before, fine. But I don't think, because of the fact that Singleton is, you know, designated basically to hit righties as well, I don't know that that helps you. He's got a big enough body and tall enough, you know, frame to have a good target to throw to, but I don't know that we got to go that far to experiment with him there.
No, I don't think so either. I guess in an emergency you could, but yeah, Singleton hits righties well enough. Now his defense leaves a lot to be desired. I remember those 2 weeks though when he made like a diving play or two. It was like, oh, Singleton, good defender. How quickly that changed. And then who goes down when Tucker comes up? We'll see. It'll be September, so the Astros can make a roster because Tucker's not coming up September 1. So the Astros are going to add a 14th position player. My guess it's going to be Cesar Salazar, so they can carry third catcher, be more comfortable playing Yiner and Caratini in the same lineup. That's my guess. I think it'll be Salazar. Uh-huh. So then once Tucker comes back up, I think they send Salazar back down.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think that, you know, from the standpoint of what you're getting right now out of Gamble and Hayward means that you don't need to go see Leon again. You don't need to see guys like that. And because of the fact that offensively you're so much better when you can have both Yiner and Caratini in the lineup, I like what you said. I would tend to agree with that as well. The pitching decision is going to be interesting as well, simply because everybody wants to see somebody else. But right now it seems to kind of be settling in to where you've got a lot better options than you had a while ago. You probably just bring King back.
Yeah, I think that's what I think. I thought it was funny that they would say, you know, Montero could be an option, Forrest could be an option. No, I think King's the guy. I think King would be the guy for the Astros. We talked a little bit about the Astros' defense yesterday. It's been a problem lately. Pena with not only the error but also a mental gaffe, charging a ball whenever you have a big, slow man running. And then Shea Whitcomb, probably lack of experience, just go run into the dude. Like, if he's going to do that little gaming stuff where he's trying to deke you, like, just run into him. Run into him. It's interference. He's out and he's over and you get out of that. But when do we start talking about the defense and the fact that it's let you down lately?
Yeah, we got to start talking about it, Jeremy, because it's one thing to say they survived what they survived last night. And I think of the things you mentioned, the other thing is the double play ball that was hit to Whitcomb. I thought that he could have turned that. I thought that he was almost trying to be too sure with securing the baseball, didn't turn get the first turn there quick enough, and therefore Altuve's throw was late, where I thought that they could have caught a double play there too, which would have helped them immensely. But when you start thinking about the last couple of weeks and the fact that we've seen the gaps, we saw the double play ball that Pena was easy double play ball to Altuve, and he threw it into right field. It was in Baltimore, I think. And then you go around the diamond. The Singleton play that literally cost you the Orioles game because he stayed way back. He took his time. He didn't get to first in time, and that ended up biting you in the butt with the grand slam that beat you there. Altuve, we know he doesn't have a good throwing arm, but lately the throws and some of the ways that he's fielded or not fielded baseballs have been an issue. And then the primary big issue is you're trying to get the two young guys at third base because Bregman had the elbow issue, and then last night when he got tossed. And I think that it you could go back and say if Bregman's in the game, he probably makes all of those plays, and we're not talking about those gaffes. But they've been popping up more and more, and I know that in the past this was what part of a Espada's job when he was the bench coach. Omar Lopez, you know, is the guy that does it now. But I just think that they've got to shore up the defense because it's one thing to say it's a regular season game and they escaped last night in a game they probably should have lost based on the way they played defensively. But in the playoffs, you can't lose a game because you have defensive gaffes like we've been seeing.
Yeah, I mean, they just have to play better. I don't know if there's, like, another answer to it. You know what I mean? Like, they obviously they work on it. They're professionals. But they're not a great defensive team. You know, Yiner has his – Yiner's good at some things. He's not great at others. Like, he's a terrible framer, but he's got a really good arm, and he's good at, like, blocking balls in the dirt, although he tries to pick them way too often than, like, using his chest protector. They don't have a good defensive first baseman. You know, Singleton's not good. DeZinzo doesn't have a whole lot of experience over there. Altuve, at this stage of his career, very limited range-wise. He's not a good defensive second baseman. Peña has a gold glove, but the analytics don't like Peña defensively. So that's kind of weird that they don't think he has tremendous range. Bregman's elite at third base with a weak arm. Left field, you're fine, usually. Dubon's a good defender. Chaz, who's not an Astro anymore, really good defender. Jordan's not. He's below average. Jake Meyer's really good in center, and then Tucker's good, but he's not currently here, so it depends on who's playing there. Hayward's known to be a good defender. Gamble, I think, is average. So it's not like that they have a great defense, but they've been playing their defense about as bad as they've had all year. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, and I think that they dodged a massive bullet when we were thinking about the fact that maybe Bregman isn't going to play third base anymore, and he's starting to take balls at first base. I think the other thing that you mentioned is the big one, which is as good as they can be offensively with Yiner playing first, no matter what they have at first base, it's not a great option, because it's one thing to say you're going to dig the baseball out on throws, but the other thing that's more important is just being able to field the position. And we think about the play that Mancini made back in the playoffs before. Just when you think, yeah, the first baseman's not going to be relied upon to make too many defensive plays. Yeah, you just never know. And the old adage in baseball where the ball's going to find you, it just seems like they've been very lax. The young guys with a lot on their plate seem to have tensed up a bit when they've had to fill in and play. And it's something that, you know, you hate to bring up, but hopefully they can start dialing it in again so that they can play better defense, because they've always been known as a team that's been pretty good, fundamentally sound defensively. You just don't want situations like that to pop up in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, of course. Of course. Like, what would you do to improve
it? But like the Whitcomb play at third base last night. I mean, that's a play that you can't let cost you in the playoffs. Like you said, if you run into the guy, then all is taken care of. But it's just judgment on those kind of plays. You know, if you've played enough third base, you know that you can get the runner's interference there. You know, from a Peña perspective, that's a veteran play that should be made by a guy that's had experience, that's won a gold glove, that you knew he could take his time. You knew you had a slow runner. But, again, sometimes it won't come. You're hoping it doesn't come back to bite you. But yet it does, and it seemed like recently it's been magnified because the plays that were not made ended up coming back to bite them in the butt, too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm looking for the solution here. Like, I mean, they're professionals. I think they're working at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's kind of going back to, like, what you said about with Hayward at first base. Like, I just think that, you know, from the standpoint of I don't know how many more options you're going to try at first base and realize you don't have a good defensive option. I don't think at this point – no matter, you know, John Singleton's playing first base his whole career. I mean, these are things that, you know, mentally and just with reps, you already know that he should know. So you're right. Yeah, from a solution standpoint, it's not – I don't think there's a quick fix answer to it. But whoever not named John Singleton, too, is playing first, all of them need to be taking more reps. Yiner's got to be working, you know, taking a lot more ground balls at first base if he's going to play more consistently there. And then from the young guys' perspective – I mean, I know that they've been juggled around trying to find out, you know, used at different positions in Sugar Land because of where they might be called up to play with the Astros. But, you know, at a certain point in time, you got to figure it out. Like, is Whitcomb going to play? What's his best infield position?
I mean, Whitcomb wouldn't be in a playoff lineup. I mean, unless you have injuries, Whitcomb's on the bench.
And is DeCenzo just a third baseman?
No, I think DeZinzo's probably your right-handed option at first base against lefties some days, depending on, you know, what the whole Yiner-Caratini situation is. I would say that's his role right now.
I think better than Singleton in the fact that because he's played his whole career playing infield positions, I feel better about him from a fielding perspective in that regard. And I think that he's naturally going to be a guy that's going to get more comfortable if he's going to be the heir apparent to Bregman or if he's going to play third base more consistently. it's just it's frustrating that, you know, you notice more and more that the defensive gaps have actually hurt this team.
Sure.
A lot of times you can kind of get away with it and just say, okay, we dodged a bullet there. But a lot of them have bit them recently.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, it has bit you, and they have been annoying. Now, I would say that these guys are professionals and that they're working at it. Like, I mean, I'm sure that Payne was pretty beat up over the fact that he made an error that prolonged the inning. Like, I just think that that's their job and they work on it. Maybe I'm being paranoid and foolish there. Or naive, I mean. 713-780-ESPN. PNB's broadcasting from the River House, East River 9. TK will join us at the top of the hour. DJ Bienname at 5 o'clock. And then who said it? Smack dab in the middle. Jose Altuve said that Yordan Alvarez is the best hitter in baseball. So we ask you, is Yordan Alvarez the best hitter in baseball? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. The best thing to do on September 7th is to go to the Red Bull Show Run. Cannot wait for this. I love the Netflix show on F1. I'm sure that you do too. If you've watched it, you've been hooked. And I'm fired up that the Red Bull Show Run is coming to Houston. I'm even more fired up that it's free. It's free to all ages thanks to Red Bull. They're bringing F1 to Houston September 7th in the heart of downtown Houston at Discovery Green. This is your chance to see championship-winning F1 cars doing sprints, burnouts, much, much more around Discovery Green at a custom-built racetrack. First time ever in the U.S. where you witness dual appearances with two championship-winning F1 cars. And while at the event, you can explore an expansive Red Bull fan zone and festival grounds that will introduce you to the exciting world of Red Bull. It's more than just Formula One racing. It's a chance to experience the world of Red Bull through a family-friendly, all-ages Red Bull fan zone. Aspiring racers. I think I could have been a racer if I gave it a shot when I was young. But you can put your driving skills to the test on the Red Bull Racing Simulators. Learn to spin some tracks at the Red Bull Turn It Up DJ table. Get your picture taken with a Red Bull Racing F1 car up close to share with your friends. Purchase official merch featuring your favorite Red Bull racing drivers. And then food trucks, drinks, aplenty all throughout the event as well. Single day admission-free event open to everyone. Tickets are not required. Bring the entire family for a day of F1 fun. All day, September 7th, downtown Houston at Discovery Green. Head to redbull.com/showrunHouston to learn more. That's redbull.com/showrunHouston.
You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
Killer Bees at East River 9, the River House. Fantastic food, fantastic drink, fantastic views, fantastic golf, fantastic pickleball. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. That time of year again where we want to thank you, our loyal listeners, at our 2024 Listener Appreciation Party. Join the broadcast, editorial, and management team of ESPN 97.5, 92.5 for an evening of food, drinks, and fun at the home of Gal Media. While you're here, make sure to weave your way in and out of the production side of the building for a behind-the-scenes look at where and how your favorite shows and videos are made. A limited amount of guaranteed admission tickets are available for purchase and includes food and drink. Must be 21 or up to attend. 21 and up. Head to ESPN975.com under the promotions tab to secure your tickets today. Astros lineup is out today. No Bregman. That's the headliner here. Altuve at second. Yordan stays in the two-spot at DH. Yiner catches. Caratini at first. Pena at short. Hayward in right. And then Gamble in left. Myers in center. Dubon mans the hot corner today. I guess Bregman serving a one-game suspension. I'm kidding. Hopefully that elbow's not barking at him again, though.
That's what I'm thinking. The first thing that came to mind is obviously it's a big series. They get the first game. You want your best lineup out there. I hope this is nothing more than just preventatively not trying to overload him at third base, because otherwise I would think he should be in there again tonight, and we just got done talking about what he means defensively.
Yeah, I mean, he had half the game off yesterday. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't feel like a day off.
No, that's exactly what I was thinking, too. I was like, yeah, and plus he got at least half a game off last night to kind of put his feet up, so he should be ready to go.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it would be a day off, so hopefully that's hopefully we're reading too much into it and it's no big deal and they just want to give him another day off his feet. Altuve the other day, Yordan after the three-homer game, and then Yordan again had a great offensive game yesterday. I kind of like him in the two-spot. A spot has tried so hard to get Yordan in the two-spot all year. Started him there this year. It didn't really work early. They had to kind of shake it up. He said he did it in Philadelphia. the final game of the series because he gave Yiner the day off and he wanted like protection with Bregman, so he moved Jordan to the two hole. But then yesterday, Jordan still in the two hole with Yiner back in the lineup because he had a three homer game. So Jordan in that two spot again. I kind of like it. But Altuve the other day said about Jordan, I always say that he's, for me, the best hitter in the big league, Jordan. I know we have many hitters in the league, but he's up there with the best. Do you agree with Altuve that Jordan's the best hitter in baseball?
Boy, it's a short list. I was going over in my head of guys that I would consider to be in that realm of possibilities. And when you look at it, I mean, from a power standpoint, you know there's Judge, you know there's Shohei, but can they hit for average the way Jordan can? Because, I mean, he's just so reliable, and it's not just a boomer situation. You see so many of these guys that hit all the bombs that are hitting just, you know, a smidge over 220, 225. The fact that he has the great combination of being able to hit for average, he can hit for power, and he can hit in the clutch, I just think you can count on maybe less than one hand the guys that might be in the conversation with the two guys that I mentioned. I'm a big fan of Ramirez in Cleveland, but obviously he doesn't have the kind of power numbers that Jordan does. I'd say, I mean, pound for pound, if I'm biased, fine, but I just think the combination of average and power, will he hit more home runs than Ohtani and Judge? No. Will he hit for a better average, in my opinion? Yes. I would say, I could obviously, I'll say it. I agree with Altuve.
Yeah, I can't go as far as number one. I certainly think that he is in the, like, on one hand, like, he's top five in all of baseball. I'd agree with that. I would also say that I think he has the talent to be the best hitter for the combination of all those things. I think he can hit for average better than anybody. I think he can lead. I think he can win a batting title. Like, in how many sluggers can you say can win a batting title? I think he's a guy that can win a triple crown. I think he has the highest potential of any hitter in baseball. But I actually think it's his inconsistencies as to why I wouldn't have him number one. I would have guys like Judge over him. I would probably have Soto over him slightly, Witt, Ohtani over him. And it's because of the home road splits. If Jordan Alvarez was as good all the time as he is on the road, we're probably talking about the best hitter in baseball. But he just doesn't do it at home for whatever reason. So it's hard for me to have him at the top of the list. Now, if I'm taking one of these guys in the playoffs, give me Jordan. Like, Jordan's already proven to be extremely clutch in the postseason, comes through when the time is big. Go look at Judge's postseason numbers. They are not very good. Bobby Witt has not played in the postseason. Shohei Ohtani has not played in the postseason. Maybe a wild card series, but I don't think so. So give me Jordan Alvarez. Give me Jordan Alvarez in the postseason. But if I'm talking about the best hitter in the game right now, it's hard for me, with as mediocre as he's been at home, to give him the edge over the other guys that we mentioned.
I think that's fair. I think the combination of injury, road splits factor in. I think when you're talking about playoff and then how you weight all the different potential things, judging them on consistency, availability, playoffs, I think Soto's a guy. You mentioned him. I didn't put him in the, and I probably should have. But Soto, you know, in the playoffs, we all know how old he was when he did it. But he was in the playoffs, and he was a big reason why Washington was doing what they were doing. But I think that, like we both said, I think there's your handful of guys to pick and choose from. I think Mookie Betts is a guy that's got an incredible eye. He hits for average. He has power. He doesn't hit the big power numbers, but he's one of the better hitters in the game, especially with the right video coordinator. But yeah, you're right. From Jordan, all the tools are there. There's no denying that this guy can be the best hitter in baseball and probably stay there, and I think that things are fixable. It's just being able to figure out the splits, but more so than anything else, we kid about it because we've had it happen so many times, the availability of the freakish, weird injuries and or occurrences that suddenly he's scratched from the lineup or is going to miss a series on the road, and you're like, wait, what? Those are the kind of things, too, when the availability is more there and we eliminate some of those things, too. You can't deny the ability.
Yeah, I think he has it in him, and I would say that his ceilings is as high as anybody. Like, the ability to hit for contact, for power, 3-1-0, but you got to do it. Like, you got to then go do it. 3-1-0-6, I love Jordan, but if he was the best hitter in baseball, he would be doing what Judge is doing. See, I agree with that. But I would also take Jordan over Judge in the postseason. Key from L.A., sorry, but Shohei Ohtani's the best hitter in baseball, followed by Judge and then Harper. I don't know where Jordan would fall on the list, I guess, winning MVP first. Okay. MVP doesn't always show who the best hitter is, though. Like, Shohei Ohtani's going to have a built-in advantage because he plays both ways, obviously not this year, but going forward. Like, and that's fine. That's fine. Like, give me Shohei Ohtani. Like, he's a star, and I have no problem if he's winning MVPs, if he's having this type of offensive year, and then he's winning 12 to 15 games with a sub-3 ERA. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're a better hitter. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. But I would give Shohei the edge this year, just to be clear. 713-780-3776. We mentioned Bregman's not in the lineup, so he would leave the lineup. Would he leave Houston? Would Alex Bregman leave Houston? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, we all know football's back. MyBookie is here to make sure you're ready to cash in on all the action. MyBookie has incredible promotions like weekly risk-free boosts on Thursdays where you can bet without a sweat. If your bet hits, you win big. If it doesn't, forget it. MyBookie's going to refund your wager. That's exactly what I said. That's exactly what they're going to do. And that's just another reason why you need to go to MyBookie.ag. They're also giving away hundreds of thousands of prizes with their Super, Survivor, and Squares contests. Join in now for your shot to win huge cash rewards. Get it all started right now. Go to MyBookie.ag, use our promo code BET975, claim some extra bank on your first deposit. MyBookie's bonuses and options make it easy to deposit with everything from crypto, credit, and straight cash. The bigger your deposit, the better your bonus. Check out the new loyalty program with MyBookie Plus. The more you play, the more you win. It's simple. Climb through the tiers of the loyalty rewards program to unlock even more epic promotions, exclusive giveaways, and bigger rewards. MyBookie Plus, it's the lock of the century. But as I always tell you, they're always taking care of you with bonuses too. Go to MyBookie.ag. Never forget to use our promo code BET975 and reap all the benefits of a super place to put your money down that's going to make sure you're taken care of, your money's safe and secure, and everything that can go other than the bets your way. Check them out today. Go to MyBookie.ag, where you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, with the only place I tell you to do it, MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
This week, our restaurant of the week is the Best Stop in Katy. We were there the other day. Joe George and Sean Mapes, the Killer G's, the Gag Show. They're going to be stopping by the one in Scott, Louisiana on the way home is what they told me. The Best Stop Supermarket expanded to Katy, as you know. No more trips to Scott, unless you're Joe and Sean, for some down-home Cajun-inspired groceries and takeout eats, including boudin and pork rinds. They brought it to you right at I-10, just west of 99. Whether you want some cracklin or boudin for your Labor Day road trip, or some specialty Cajun meats like Cajun stuffed pork chops or tenderloin for your next tailgate, the Best Stop has you covered with authentic Cajun flavor direct from the boot. Todd Callis, TK, will be joining us at the top of the hour. Alex Bregman, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Would he leave Houston? Do you think Bregman would leave the city?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. Jeffrey.
If he's a free agent and he. Hello?
Yeah, Jeff Passan the other day, he wrote the article talking about free agents in an early primer on free agency. And whenever he brought up Alex Bregman, he put the biggest decision is Alex Bregman. He said the big decision for Bregman is simple. Would he leave Houston? It was his refuge after the scandal. I don't know why you're putting that in there, Passan. Houston embraced Bregman, always cheered him. He was brought up in some of the lowest times. Perhaps then the better question for the Astros, does owner Jim Crane want to keep Bregman, or would he rather spin it on future signings like Kyle Tucker? So if that is the big decision, would he leave Houston? Yeah, I think it's a pretty easy answer. I think that Alex Bregman would easily leave Houston. He's represented by Scott Boras. I think he's willing to play some do some business with you. I don't know if it's going to be like a major hometown discount. Maybe you could sign him for like 95% of what he's getting in free agency. But I feel like if he feels like he's disrespected in the open market, I think that Bregman would have no problem leaving Houston.
Yeah, I think you go back to the fact that he sold his house before we even got into the summer months of last year, moved to Arizona, and everybody was like, oh, he's a fixture in Houston. He's never going to leave. I mean, a lot of these guys, whether you like it or not, you're not going to get everybody that's going to live here year-round. But the fact is that I think he still wants his money. I think that you can get close on the AAV to get him what he wants, and maybe there is a little hometown discount involved. I think the big thing is going to be the years. I think the Astros, as we know, have set a pattern, and I don't think they're going to waver from it for a guy that's his age to say that, you know, for a couple of years we'll be willing to talk to you. But if another team is willing to throw an ungodly amount of years at him, like 5 years or even 4 years might be a stretch for some teams, I think that when you look at it and say, is that where the rubber hits the road for the Astros? I think so. I think that's where the Astros will balk on it. I think that that will make Bregman walk on it. I think he'll take another team that gives him more years at the same kind of money, and he'll say thanks for the memories.
Yeah. I think it's – I have it at like 50-50, though. Like, I do think that the Astros view Bregman as somebody that they want to keep if they could. I also don't think that Bregman's going to get this huge contract that prices the Astros out in terms of length. Like, I think the AAV is going to be high. I think it's going to be somewhere around $30 million. But I don't think that the length is going to be nuts. And we've seen over time that Jim Crane's willing to give the AAV. Jim Crane's willing to spend the dollars. What he is hesitant of doing is that long-term financial investment that's 6, 7, 8 years. And I don't think the Bregman contract's going to is going to be that. So because of that, I do think that there's a 50% chance that Bregman can stay in Houston.
Yeah, I think the other thing that factors in from the Astros' perspective is, to the point you were making, is the fact that there is no clear and obvious replacement for him should he leave. When we talked about Correa when he left, whether it was Aledmys Diaz for a year or it was Jeremy Peña who ended up taking the bull by the horns right away and then never looking back, you had options. You had options for the guys that left when Cole left, and even with Springer. You had options. I don't know what the clear-cut option is, and as you and I have been talking about overall, everybody likes to talk about, you know, the intangibles, the leadership, the hitting, the way he commands the strike zone, but his defense is so damn good, and we've just got done talking about the defense earlier in the show too, and you know how vital it is to have a guy at third that can field the position. I think as long as he's okay with lesser years, that there is a deal to be made to where they also stuck with him this year when he was absolutely crapping the bed for the majority of the first half of the season and then found a way that no matter how many, oh, he gets a slow start. It's never been this slow, but they hung with him. And I think that he knows this team also is still competitive. That matters too. I think that I would hope that there's a way, as long as he's willing to come down on years, that they'll maybe come up a little bit in terms of AAV and they can find a happy place for a couple years.
Yeah, I don't know how much being competitive matters, though. Like, he has the two World Series titles. Like, people who leave in free agency that are, you know, motivated by the money don't really care where they go. I don't know what Bregman's motivations are. We think that he likes to win because of, you know, the ball player he's been in Houston. But let me look at Chris Bryant. Like, he went, collected the money for a bad baseball team, hasn't been very good. Luis Baez went to collect the money for a bad baseball team, hasn't been very good. So I think a lot of that's kind of guessing what Alex Bregman would be, you know, seeking in free agency. And then the heavy rumor, too, is Arizona. And it's not like Arizona's a bad baseball team. Arizona's good. So I don't know. I don't know what his motivators are going to be.
That's where he bought his house, too. I mean, that's where he moved to. So that's where he was kind of all kind of together going. If there's a place for him to kind of get all things under one umbrella, it could be Arizona. I just feel like, you know, you're right. Everybody's different. Javi Baez to Detroit, he's been bad. They're not great. I get it. Chris Bryant's been a disaster. He left, but he got all the money he wanted. I don't think there's any doubt that Bregman, you know, has money on the top of his mind, and it should be. But I do think he's so competitive that he does the legacy he created here. I think there's something to be said about the fact that he can have everything. He can have his cake and eat it too, so to speak, in that I think he can still get there, get what he wants in terms of the yearly salary, stay a part of this community and everything that he built here. It's just a matter of, is he willing to take less years and bet on himself?
Yeah, for me, I'll just go ahead and put the, like, where I stand on this. I want Chapman to opt out of his deal. I think he will opt out of his deal. And I want the Astros to sign the cheaper of the two. If Bregman and Chapman are both free agents, I want the cheaper of the two third basemen to be the Astros' third baseman going forward. Because I think they're pretty similar offensive players at this stage of their career. Bregman is elite defensively. Chapman's better defensively than Bregman. DeZinzo, like, it's too early to tell what he's going to be, but, I don't know if he's going to be ready at the start of next season. I have World Series aspirations. So that's where I stand. The cheaper of Chapman, the cheaper of Bregman. 5798, good question about Bregman. I think he would rather stay in Houston where the fan base loves him versus everywhere else where they still boo him every at-bat. Yeah, but look at Correa. I mean, Correa's, like, loved in Minnesota now. He is a team leader, fits best in Houston, but who's to say another team won't offer him so much more money than the Astros do that he signs elsewhere? If he's willing to give the Astros a hometown discount, how much of a hometown discount? 10%? 15%? Where do you think that's at?
Yeah, we've talked about before. I think it could be in the neighborhood of, regardless, it's going to be between 25 and 33 a year probably. I think that the Astros would probably be hoping and willing to go right up to and about 30. I think it's a couple million dollars that he'd be willing to give, but I think that's where we start getting into how long's the contract again. I think ideally the Astros would probably like to do 2 or 3. He's probably looking at 4 or 5. That's fair. I don't know how much the Astros are going to be willing to give.
713-780-ESPN, a few texts on this. 9243, Bregman is a D-bag, not smart to pay him a long-term contract. Tyler and Conroe, I don't need to be choir boys. 4218, does winning a championship this year have anything to do with Bregman's decision, win and stay, or this year doesn't matter? I don't think it matters. I think he's done his team success. I think he wants to get the bag. 8341, guys, I hate to say this, but Bregman's gone. So there is that. King of Twitch is saying that Chapman's not better defensively than Alex Bregman. I think he's better defensively than Alex Bregman.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, I agree Chapman.
I think that Chapman is his range, his arm, everything. He's phenomenal defensively.
Yeah, I think they're pretty even. I give Chapman the slight edge because of the arm strength. Bregman might have him slightly in range, but it's pretty dang close. And then offensively, I mean, Chapman 771 OPS this year, Bregman 761. So a little different hitters, different little profiles. I mean, Bregman's more, hey, I'm going to walk a ton, I'm not going to strike out. Chapman, a little bit more swing and miss. We'll walk a good amount, though, and then he's got some he's got some power. He's got some pop. He and Bregman tied for 21 home runs. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. When we return, Todd Callis, the voice of the Astros, joins us. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.